lives now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I am Tawanda Henry Biti. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast in the country.
Undisputed. The number one.
The greatest. We're the greatest.
We have to be. We have to be. So yeah, this week we're going to be talking about the state of the podcast. It's been a while since Henry and I have been on the show, TD2.
Yeah, just the two of us. So yeah, we're just going to catch up with everyone and with ourselves, I suppose. And state of the podcast, state of politics, state of the economy, and yeah, just generally the state of the state.
The state of this, actually, yeah. I think it's necessary to take stock of what's going on, because sometimes you can get caught up in life, in things that are happening, in events, and politics is a very fast-paced industry or activity, I suppose. So what happens today...
It's only an industry if you're in ZANU, bro.
But basically what happens today can be very irrelevant tomorrow, or can have lasting effects for the next... how much longer until elections?
I don't know. It's before the 31st of July, 2018 is the date that everyone is now gearing up to. And I think that's basically the same with us. The podcast is gearing up to that day, and maybe even we have a live show
on the actual day of elections. You know, it's quite sad, to be quite honest, that we are living the next 16 to 18 months for elections. As in, that's the one thing everyone in this country, or a significant proportion of the people in this country, are thinking about is 2018 elections.
Yeah,
we're not even thinking about what are we going to do to grow the economy in 2017. How many babies are being born this year, and what's the mortality rate, and all those things. No, the primary question seems to be, come 2018,
what's going to happen?
Who is running? Will there be a coalition? How will they fare in the rural areas? All these things. It's focusing on something. And this has been something that people have been talking about since about 2015.
Yeah, it's basically probably, and I think it's probably the first, as an adult, the first election season I've been in. And it's quite tiring already. I'm already tired. And it's funny to be a political podcast and say I'm tired of elections, but...
And we haven't even started.
We haven't even started the actual run-up. I think the real tiring issue is the uncertainty, the speculation, the lack of clarity from, everywhere. Let's actually get into it. Like, factions everywhere, parties can't stay together, things like that. Like, you can't really begin to provide an assessment or ideas of what are going to happen, or predictions, without any sense of clarity or certainty as to where do people stand.
And that's actually the issue, is that because there's so much uncertainty, it's taking away from policy matters, it's taking away from governing of the day. So when you look at ZANU-PF, the state of ZANU-PF, and not state in the sense of it being a nation. So sometimes
they like to believe that ZANU-PF is Zimbabwe and Zimbabwe is ZANU-PF.
So the state of ZANU-PF right now it's divided between one center of power, G40, and Lacoste. We can't even deny that there are factions within ZANU-PF.
Yeah.
It's an open secret. They like to, hide and say, one center of power, we are loyal to one center of power. Yes, but that is rhetoric they use to protect themselves. So you have this Lacoste G40 situation, which then causes a lot of problems in the public. So, for example, I spoke about this in the last, in one of the previous podcasts, is that you have government officials, ministers, people in the president's office going at each other on public platforms when they sit together in cabinet or every, you know, cabinet sits every Tuesday, they sit together in cabinet.
And
when they go to Politburo meetings, they sit together, but straight after that, they're coming onto Twitter, they're going into the media.
And going at each other in not very nice terms.
And this is the problem, is that these things, I understand, there's no perfect organization. You're definitely going to have differences of opinion, differences of intelligence, a whole bunch of differences. But you don't bring these issues out into the public because people will lose confidence in you and your ability to govern, especially when you have a mandate to govern. Right now, there's so many people who just worry because there's no consistency from the government, because today you are one center of power, or we are together, we are smiling, but tomorrow I'm coming out and I'm calling you all sorts of names.
And then people are meant to think that you have our best interests at heart. But I mean, ultimately and I think it's both, this is not just a ZANU-PF problem, it's a failure of leadership. The leaders are not leading at the moment, because somewhere along the line, and I mean, for ZANU it was 36 years ago, but I don't know where with the opposition, somewhere along the line it became more about power or ruling and not leading. And I mean, power, money, everything that's entailed. And these sound like cliches, but people are more interested in how certain decisions affect their position in the party, on the scale or in favor of the president or the principal, how you can appease the principal, than how those decisions will actually, you know, affect the people. And for a government that likes to say that it's elected, you know, democratically or otherwise, it's disappointing. And I don't know, it's going to be a long, long, tough road, because at the end of the day, we're going to have to all decide, Guti, who's going to have ascendancy in which camp, which faction. Lacoste or G40 is going to have ascendancy before 2018, and what's going to happen after that. Because one of the things that we're faced with is that even if they do galvanize for 2018 and support, you know, Sekulwa Simbanasho, or support the president in his run for election, and he somehow wins that election, whether through opposition disorganization or however he wins, even genuinely, if he wins genuinely, we still have to deal with the fact that we're going to have a 94-year-old president who has been elected for a 5-year term. And, you know, like, there's very few things that you'd let a 94-year-old, you trust a 94-year-old to do. You know, I don't know if it was you or some of my friends were saying, Guti, ini nandisanda mbofudza mombe. But people who are going to vote for Mombe, who are serious, who are Mombe, who are not going to vote for Mombe, who are not Mombe, who are not.
That was not me. Let me just clarify. That was not me.
So not even being, you know, opposition. It's not even an opposition thing. It's any, you know, logical person or reasoning person can see. Could you don't, you can't trust a 94-year-old with cows, let alone running the country. And now that's who we must entrust our future to. And for ZANU-PF, you're thinking that's who we must entrust the future of our party to. And for Zimbabweans and citizens as a whole, that's who we're going to be stuck with if something drastic doesn't happen in the opposition.
For me, it's within ZANU-PF itself, is that there doesn't seem to be this galvanizing towards rebranding the party, in the sense that you have, I'm not sure the statistics, but you have a large percentage of your population that is under the age of 35 or under the age of 40, but you have a very old top heavy
structure,
you know. And there's nothing wrong with having senior party members. It's very important. But I feel that there's a gap between, and I say this because I am ZANU-PF affiliated, is that this
we bought it renovated.
There's a gap between the old and the young within the party. And it, unfortunately, it seems that because of the factionalism that is taking place, the young people that are coming in are, you have to pick a side, or you're aligned to someone. It's not people coming in on a basis of a meritocracy, which, you know, you said that it started 36 years ago about ZANU being, you know, about power. I think there's also different dynamics there that have to be taken into consideration. At the time, I don't think that was their sole, you know, purpose or ideology or whatever, or belief. However, there are a number of things that have happened over the years. It has been 36 years. And the party itself has changed in terms of some of the key individuals over the years who have been there.
I think on that point, guys, that a lot of us, you know, at least for me, I've only just started looking, you know, as people are ramping up towards, you know, Bob's 93rd birthday. I've been looking at some of these old speeches on YouTube and some of these old speeches. He's been quite consistent in his desire for a one-party state.
He's been quite consistent in his desire
to rule until, you know, the cows come home. So it's maybe us as a people who ignored those warning signs when things were all gravy and things were all bull. But if we're going to say that Mugabe has had an indelible imprint on ZANU-PF ideology and on the party since he came to power as a prime minister in 1980, and then did everything in his power, including the First Amendment of the Constitution, executive presidency, to bring power around himself. So these are things we can't ignore, because, you know, even the concept of an executive president over the prime minister system was something that was, you know, sold as being, you know, moving away from the Lancaster Agreement. But really, it had the net effect of bringing power to one center, or bringing power to himself.
And this is
years and years ago, before the MDC was even, you know, a fetus.
I hear you on that point. But what I'm trying to say is that ZANU-PF itself as an institution, as an organization, has now gone towards this one center of power ideology. I don't think it was, perhaps for President Mugabe, yes, that was his...
He's molded the party in his own image now. He's
been wanting a one-party state and that sort of thing. But I don't think it's as a party itself and as members of the party and other, you know, individuals that were inside it. And what it stood for initially, that's what it wanted. How it has now become is a transformation over the years. And there's a lot of events and things that happened that you can check the trajectory of how this actually came about. But that for me is the state of ZANU-PF, in the sense that I really hope that they sort out these issues, because it's not productive. It doesn't help anyone. And it's unfortunate. I don't know. It's sad that the state of all political parties then follows this similar pattern.
You know,
that if there was a sensible opposition party in this country,
they would be taking advantage of this.
Exactly that. I'd be taking advantage of.
But they're not. The state of the opposition. I mean, we spoke about Zim People First, Zimbabwe People's First, and Dr. Mujuru, and the expulsion of those members. It seems at the moment that she's going to come on top. But it's a fiery victory. I mean, what kind of victory is it when you lose, you know, most of your party, essentially, or the names that you're known for the party? And, you know, it's a mess there. These misogynistic claims are going around. Kodowashe Basgiti said some pretty vile things in his interview with the Herald, I think, about, you know, power not being transmitted through the surname or sexually, essentially, that they were backing General Solomon Mujuru and not so much Dr. Joyce. So much vitriol and anger within that party, which is spewing across into the opposition space. And these are the people that are meant to be the solution or the other option for the country, for the Zimbabwe to for Zimbabweans to vote for. And then you have, you know, the other side of the opposition, Morgan Tsvangirai and his party, deciding, which, no, they're quite, I don't know, they seem elated. You know, this is just back behind closed doors. You know, I think Obud Gutu tweeted something, you know, very snide about how the house sit, Mujuru's house was burning down. But you sort of wonder, Guti, if you're a sheep, and you're being hunted by a lion, in this case, instance, ZANU-PF is being the lion, and you're chosen as the sheep, I don't know why you would rejoice. So in the opposition, we have to understand, the opposition has to really understand that we're under siege, and whatever else we see happening in factions and in ZANU-PF, when the time comes, we'll be very focused on destroying the opposition and winning that election.
I always say that President Mugabe, the second most protected man in this country, is likely Morgan Tsvangirai, because President Mugabe knows that come hell or high water, he will beat him in an election.
So how can you celebrate? You know, I think I don't know, was it Maneru or one of these articles comes out and they said the only real opposition. I think it was even Jonathan Moyo tweeted it. Professor Moyo tweeted that, you know, there's lots of opposition in Zimbabwe, but there's only one opposition party.
Yeah.
And you hear people from the MDC celebrating as if they've been, you know, anointed. But if you're a sheep, how do you celebrate being chosen by a lion?
Huh? No, but...
Like, it seems ridiculous that, you know, you now seek ascendancy because you've been told you've got the fattest ass and we can eat you first. So I mean, for me, the opposition, I don't know, it's a very personal thing, because the mistakes are so basic, so rudimentary, that as to be laughable. And that's exactly what ZANU-PF is, because, you know, it's almost a reflection of their confidence in their ascendancy and their ability to win the next election, that they don't even care that, you know, you have people saying that the only real opposition in this country right now is between Lacoste and G40. You know, the only competition for the next election is going to be in the ZANU-PF primaries.
You know, it's funny that you say that. I was Kumusha over the weekend in Buhera, and I was having conversations with some of the, you know, people who live there, asking about, you know, their MP and that sort of thing. And really, it seems that the real tussle or fight is going to be within the primaries, ZANU-PF primaries. Who's actually going to be the candidate for ZANU-PF? Otherwise, it's pretty much a foregone conclusion on our side that ZANU will win at this stage. And it's a poor reflection on the opposition, because they really are not... There seems to be no clarity. Are we standing in elections? Are we not standing in elections? No reforms, no elections was what they've said, but they all seem to be gearing up for elections, pretty keen on this coalition, but it's a coalition that is going to be very much a marriage of convenience for some, and I'm not getting into this unless you're coming in on my terms for others. I know right now as it stands, though, the only individual who has any leverage is Tsvangirai.
Of course, but... Right?
And there's no way anyone else coming into this coalition can dictate terms to him, I don't think. Because when you look at Maimujuru, for example, she's just had... There's now factions within ZIM-PF, or a split. She's thrown people out. They lost Bikita West, which is a rural constituency, which even by the margin by which they lost was also quite large. I think it was like 13,000 votes, and they got like 2,000.
So it was almost 11,000.
Yeah, it was
about lost by a margin of 11,000.
11,000 votes, which is quite significant. So you can't even go to a coalition conversation and say, look, Kuma rural areas, maybe, okay, fair enough, it was one constituency. But that huge gap, it's difficult to go and convince Tsvangirai, because it will come down to an issue of what, you know, what numbers do you have? How many people do you have supporting you? I know she's going on tours around. Yeah. She's having rallies.
But the thing is, her tours aren't for building the coalition. Her tours are to take her factional fights to the people. So
that
she's
comes out on top.
Yeah, she's going to the one and saying, "Da fire one now. And I'm the queen bee," because they said all these things.
She doesn't like that term, queen bee, actually.
Yeah, well, of course. I don't know why people call her queen bee. But no, that's what she's going. That's if you see her comments about her being saying that they said that they wanted to sleep with her, or these really nasty, vile things. That was said at a rally, because she's taking the factional fights and the people being fired to the people, which is a very Tsvangirai-esque move, and it's smart, because once you've got the people, you've got the party.
No, I hear you, but it's
in terms that's what I was saying earlier, Kuti. You know, you're right that Tsvangirai can basically dictate the terms of the coalition at this stage. But that's why it's a failure of leadership, because he shouldn't be seeking to do that, because he needs everyone else as much as, you know, essentially they need them, because there's no chance at all that he's going to what? That he's going to win this election by himself. And that's my honest appraisal, and I don't think that anyone else, you know, thinks any differently from that, because, you know, so he needs to lead. And being a part of a leader is accepting that you need other people.
I think it's going to be quite interesting to see what happens going forward and what happens with all the smaller opposition parties and all the, all their positions. Because right now, I think we have, 40, 50 odd opposition parties. The main ones, where is Simba Makoni? Where is Welshman Ngube? Where is Tendai Biti? Where is AC Lumumba? He started a party.
AC Lumumba is not a valid opposition figure in this country or in South Africa.
Okay, but where are these guys, and what is their position? Or what are they saying or moving towards when it comes to 2018?
From some of these parties, I think if you look at what's happening with CODE, it's quite interesting. I think it sort of seems that some of the smaller opposition parties have decided that they're going to join. So the signing of CODE, you've got Walshman has signed, all at Transform Zimbabwe, all these other ones that, essentially have been called briefest parties or no-name parties or whatever, but a lot of them have joined together. So at the end of the day, it really becomes that if they can get Zim people first in whatever happens at the end of their factional fights and whoever comes out on top after the Congress to join with them before approaching Tsvangirai, then it becomes a much more powerful and a much more solid foundation. So it's almost like, you know, these little, the smaller parties by numbers or by name need to join up before what? Before they get to before they get
to
2018. We're streaming live, so I'm just reading some of the comments here. Comrade Mark is saying Morgan can dictate the terms because of Majuru splitting the party. We're much weaker now. I don't know. I agree. Everyone's much weaker because of the splitting of ZimPF, but I think at the end of the day, she should probably maybe start by trying to come together with the other parties and not so much with Morgan Tsvangirai before she's solid in her own party and the other guys have come together.
So it all hinges on Tsvangirai. Essentially, it will be Mugabe versus Tsvangirai come 2018.
Yeah, it'll be Mugabe versus Tsvangirai, and anyone who thinks differently is fooling themselves. And anyone, I mean, is essentially he's going to try and bully his way through, but I think he'll see sense, unless the anti-coalition forces in his party prevail, because that's another factional fight that's happening at the moment as well. Because a lot of these guys know that whatever happens, MDC will get at least, 20 or 30% of the vote, which means you're guaranteed a Senate seat, you're guaranteed proportional representation, you're guaranteed a member of parliament, you're guaranteed the cars, the perks that come with being an MP and being the official opposition of the country.
I mean, in urban areas, it's guaranteed ZANU-PF is highly unlikely to win any of the seats. And most of them are likely to go to MDCT, I suppose, in Harare.
I don't know about that.
You don't think so?
I think that. But also, a lot of if you realize, Kakudi Harare lost almost 6 MPs when they went to PDP. So, and then Matabililand as well.
Matabililand. That's MDC.
That's MDC. But the people that were left in the MDC, Tsvangirai, left with PDP. So Anasipepa Nkomo, a lot of these seats were. So they have work to do. And what's going to happen is if we're not careful, some of these more peri-urban constituencies or difficult to win constituencies will be taken by ZANU. Because I find it difficult that you're going to be able to take something like Mbare off ZANU-PF come 2018 with the way things are right now. Take a seat psychology at Chipawan Rise. Huh? At every alley, he's giving people. Isn't Patson
going for that seat?
Yeah, Patson says you will run, but Patson, you got the rice because you need to drop the rice, guy. You have to drop the rice.
But again, that goes to the state of politics in this guy. It really is politics of the belly.
Yeah,
in most constituencies, you'll find, and one thing I guarantee that ZANU-PF is banking on is that there will be a bumper harvest, for lack of a better term, due to command. They're going to harvest grain.
Yeah, and they're going to give people food.
And once people's bellies are filled, you know, they will vote in line in accordance. In some places, it's not going to be.
I think hunger actually makes people vote for ZANU-PF.
Hunger?
When people are hungry, the options of where to get food are very rare. But in Indakakua, Gumbakwanguka, the effect of command is essentially that even the small-time farmers are also going to have, and also because of the rain this year. Saga, you know, when everyone has got food, they have actually more time and more choice to make political decisions.
There was a lot of anger in 2008, my friend.
But that was Boram Sango guy in 2008.
That's true.
There was Boram Sango in 2008. Anyway, that's the state of politics. We're going to try and get into the state of the economy.
Yeah, state of the economy.
If my notes serve me right.
No, you're quite right. State of the economy is also quite an interesting one. Bond notes is the biggest issue.
Bond notes. Are they holding their value?
People, there was the whole, we don't want them. Then the $2 bond notes came and they were, you know, circulating. In the beginning, there were questions about them. But now the interesting thing that seems to be happening is the US dollar has become quite scarce.
Yep, as predicted.
I haven't seen a $100 bill in a long time. I haven't seen a $50 bill in a long time. 20s, yeah. 10s, sure. 5s, now that the 5 bond is here,
I don't know what's going to happen.
I haven't seen the 5s in a bit. Dollar bills are also
quite rare now.
Quite rare as well.
Yeah, I've been getting lots of bond notes to my chargin, and I've been spending them quite quickly because in my head I still don't think they're money.
Well, you buy stuff with them, ka?
Yeah, alcohol. bond notes have held their retail value. Let's say that they definitely have held their retail value for small transactions. That being said, from friends in industry have been seeing their costs go up, which is even now you can see inflationary pressures even in the shops now. You know, you buy groceries. I know, Chris, you buy groceries for yourself. You see it's getting more expensive, and that's because of the lengths that retailers have to go to get hard currency.
I'll say this. One of my colleagues, I think him and his wife run a tuck shop, and he was telling me that they went with bond notes and some of their money in US dollars to where they get their groceries and where they get their stock.
So wholesale.
Yeah, where they get their stock. And most of the money they had was in bond notes. And the suppliers said, nope, you can give us half bond notes, half US dollars. Yeah. So they had to get less stock than they wanted. And, you know, he was saying that now it means that I have to take these bond notes and buy US dollars from somewhere.
Which means they're going to translate that cost onto people. And you see, we can say retail value is held up, but essentially there's an exchange rate because you're getting, at fuel stations, if you're paying in cash, particularly US dollars, you're paying 20% less at the pump than if you're using your debit card or if you're, you know, using, even bond notes. So you see, Kuti, there's already a parallel market that's already happening right now. And the thing, like sheep, we've completely accepted this without realizing how difficult it's going to be to come back from this position.
But it's the return of the US dollar, of the Zim dollar. We are not coming back from this position.
That's what we were saying. That's what I was crying about in our last podcast. If you listen to our bond note podcast, I said as much that they're bringing back the Zimbabwean dollar. And I was the boy that cried Zim bond, Beracek. and it's a fact. They want to bring back the Zimbabwean dollar. There's been talk of we need our own currency, sovereignty, sovereign wealth, all these things, these terms that are being bandied about. So it's a gradual process, but, you know, much like...
Aside from that, let me just say, or rather, we've been operating with the US dollar, and it has not been easy on our economy, in the sense that it's just expensive to... Aside from the cost of doing business, it's also just an expensive currency in within the region. It's just cheaper to get, you know, things from down south or Zambia or wherever it is. So you have that issue of the US dollar is an expensive currency to operate with in our environment.
Yeah.
So that is one of the angles in why they are bringing back the Zim dollar. I'm not saying it's right. Let me just put that disclaimer out. Is that, you know, they are bringing it back because it's expensive to operate with the US dollar. And right now it is 1-to-1 with the US dollar. But we all know that that is a situation that
they're
is going not going to last.
They're going to change it. Either they're going to say, well, the US dollar is not stable. They're something, then say, let's have 1-to-1 with the rand, the pula, or something else, even the renminbi or something like that.
But wouldn't it
devalue the bond notes to the US dollar? That's their next step.
Yeah, no, they're likely to devalue the bond note. Would it be a bad thing to peg it at the rand, though? I don't know. I'm not
an economist either, but
we should probably get one on the show to answer that question.
Yeah, we should. My without answering the question directly, you know, you can angle regionally, especially when Mugabe was chair of SIADC, angle regionally for joining the Rand Monetary Union and using the Rand. But as opposed to having to force an unpalatable currency or pseudo-currency, or it's now a currency down our throats, like the bond note, in such a nefarious and, you know, clandestine way.
But the thing is, we do use the rand. So the rand is one of the currencies in the monetary basket that we have.
So
right?
Then we should use the rand completely. So we should have an agreement with the Reserve Bank of South Africa that the rand becomes our sole currency.
Hold up. Aside from it being our sole currency, which a lot of people... But what I want to know is, what's actually stopping people from using the rand right now?
The US dollar is stronger. It holds its value more than the rand. That's why people use the US dollar. Because the US dollar has been a stronger currency and it holds its value more. You know, every time Jacob Zuma sneezes or puts his penis in something, the rand falls.
So
that's why people want to use... I mean, you have to give it to the people, in my understanding, in Matabele, that do use the rand, and they seem to be going on quite well with almost a rejection of the bond note because the rand is so prevalent there, but that's because of their close links
to South
culturally
Africa.
and distance to South Africa.
So, but this is my thing, is that it's one of the currencies in the basket, right? And you have business people and, you know, saying, let us use the rand. What are the limitations, or what is stopping people from actually using the rand? I hear your point on saying that it's, you know, the US dollar is a stronger currency. Is that then not one of the reasons? Would it then not be one of the reasons why the government doesn't want to join the Rand Monetary Union?
No, the I'm thing just is, asking we have I don't have the answers. I don't even got the answers, Sway. We have an unhealthy appetite for US dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Based on how much we're producing, or how little we're producing, more rather. So it was not going to be sustainable, because countries that are US-backed, a lot of them are seeing fire at the moment. A lot of them are having problems with I'm not sure if it's Venezuela. There's a South American country as well that has been struggling with US dollars because of how strong it is globally and how much in demand it is. So US dollars will always be siphoned out of your economy. Introducing the bond note is not the answer, and I've said this before. The answer is increasing productive capacity of the country by giving things like tax incentives, by giving things like lowering prices.
Cost so you of can't, doing business.
And then, you know, that goes on to our next point, where you are complaining about, you know, currency shortages, about things like this, cash is short, and then your wise finance minister decides to increase, you know, VAT, or to add VAT for the first time on things like meat and fish and eggs.
That wasn't the finance minister.
It was Chinamasa.
No, wasn't that from Bima?
Was it from Bima?
I believe so.
Okay.
I'll check, but I believe it was.
I'm pretty sure they sit in the same cabinet.
Yeah, that's true. It's from
I was under the belief that it was Chinamasa. But yeah, I'll check it up. But if it's Bima, how do you put VAT on nyama, guys? On beef? You know, there's a cash shortage. You have to understand that these guys have no sympathy for...
But they reversed it.
They shelved it. They paused it while it's under review.
Which is good enough for me. Yeah, for now, I suppose. But like Magaisa said, the government creates problems and then they solve them and then they act like they're, you know, they're heroes and they're out to do better for the people. I think there's a lot of issues that need to be fixed with regards to the economy. That VAT one definitely is stressful. And it comes back to policy inconsistency. In terms of the state of our economy, I don't think will improve unless there's policy consistency. The Chinamasa and Joao were caught up in a tiff last year over indigenization of banks. There's now this policy inconsistency on VAT. There's the Potras issue where, you know, data prices go up and then 2 days later they come down. So there's a lot of inconsistency that needs to be sorted out. And I think that's one of the major things that's holding back the state of our economy, is that you're just not sure whether what is said today
is going to be in place mangwana.
Right, exactly that. And I think that's a lot of the things that's stressing a lot of people. I asked a question to people on my Twitter and Facebook, you know, people living outside of Zimbabwe, is that what would it take? Are you interested in coming back to Zim permanently? And what sort of conditions, or what would it take? What sort of environment would you like to be back? And a lot of the comments have been employment with a guaranteed income. I want a job. I want to know that money comes at the end of the month. Some people have said a level and free market playing field across the board where my entrepreneurial and corporate skills can be harnessed to both my benefit and the economy's. So it comes down to, I want a better economy. I think that's the biggest concern for most people. And I think politics, often enough, you can have a dynasty, you can have a monarch, if you will, but if the economy is solid, then people won't mind.
Yeah,
people generally won't mind. So I think that's what it is what is going on in the economy. The politics, unfortunately, sits right in the front, but it needs to take a back seat.
But you know, they've shrunk the economy to such a small scale that every single dollar and cent has to go to feeding the beast, to feeding this cannibalistic regime. I've been practicing my Nehru adjectives. No, but I mean, like, at the end of the day, it's so narrow the interest it feeds, and our economy is so small, has shrunk, and there's so little growth that there's no room for the political elites to eat, and for business to grow and also succeed. So before, you know, corruption in a lot of places, and I'm sure in America, and corruption is in Nigeria, there's corruption everywhere. Corruption in South Africa is massive, but the economy is so large that, you know, they can take a few ticks that suck on the blood. There's some rent-seeking activity. Zim, we've gotten to a point where, you know, there's just no longer, you can no longer feed ZANU-PF and feed Zimbabweans at the same time.
But you know what? I don't think, on the issue of corruption, I completely agree. But I think there was a point when it was possible.
Yeah.
I mean, there were businesses growing in the 90s. There was a lot happening at that time that allowed for the economy to grow and the politics to continue in its own trajectory. We're also not the first state to have politics at the front of the economy.
No, we're not.
There's, you know, you can cite many examples. I suppose China being one of them. Yes, I agree. They are a very big, they have a billion plus people there, and you know they're a big economy. But they have structures and a format in place that allows for the CCP to remain in control of the state and have, you know, its economic interests happening as well elsewhere.
But the second that the CCP feels it's losing power, the second that the CCP has to take decisions for power retention solely, which is what happened with this credible challenge of the MDC in the late 90s and early 2000s, and, you know, the farm invasions were all a thing as a direct result of a challenge on ZANU-PF's supremacy and power. So the second that they felt that they can no longer, they need to hold on to power, that's when the economy comes second. So the CCP right now, the Chinese Communist Party, is fine because there's no challenge from anywhere within the billion people that can unseat them from, so they can just get on with the job of governing because they don't have to worry about the job of what? Keeping power. Whereas ZANU-PF has constantly, since, in my opinion, since perhaps 2002, since that failed, 2000, that failed constitutional vote for the amendment of the constitution. Since then, they've been constantly in this power retention mode, which means resources must be challenged to the party, everything must go through the party and to the party, and, you know, nepotism increases, patronage increases, because now you what? You have to keep the party in power. So whereas before then, they were okay because they didn't really have much of a credible challenge to their thing. And before you say it, the solution is not going back to a situation where ZANU-PF is in power.
I really was just about to say, as a joke, can we just all take a back seat and be like, okay, guys.
Well, Giza should just let Ndara.
It's okay.
Kushungo.
Just do what you do. No, but I hear that is we need better. The people of Zimbabwe need better.
We deserve better overall.
It's I don't know how we are going to get to the better, because as we said, politically, come 2018, it really is going to be, Mugabe versus Tsvangirai. I don't know if that's a better option. Some people have said any change is good change, and you know that's a valid point. Let's see what happens, you know, after whatever change happens.
I think change is necessary because you don't have anyone but Mugabe right now doesn't have the same respect within his own party. In fact, doesn't have the same respect within the opposition. Like, you can quote every single opposition leader at some point in their career, even in the opposition, they've said, no, Mugabe is a great man. No, he's very intelligent. All of them say that. So, you know, even if it's someone within ZANU, cannot get away with the same level of, unless, of course, we go down the military path and we become totally militarized. But if someone is trying to run a civilian regime properly, they're going to have to make concessions. They're going to have to govern well, or govern better at least, because people will vote them out.
It's going to be interesting, certainly, to see how the state of our nation...
the economy of the nation.
This is the state of the nation aside. I mean...
Order.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And because these two things, politics and economy, are the soul, the heart and soul of what happens in Zimbabwe, it means that everything else, be it football, be it music, be it, you know,
Valentine's Day was affected by politics.
You see, everything is affected by these two things, and these two things play on each other. The politics affects the economy, and the economy in turn also affects the politics. So it's prudent for ZANU-PF. I'd hope that they would see that should they fix these two things, they'd likely stay in power ad infinitum. You know, because people don't care. I'll tell you this, people don't care.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say, is that my dream is to live in a Zimbabwe where I don't need to know who the president is. To the point where, like, you have situation like Americans, yeah? Donald Trump has come into power. A lot of Americans are just saying, okay, cool. Me, I'm still grafting. Like, I mean, ultimately, it's bad what's happening to everyone else, but I would like to be in a situation where I can just go to work and get my salary and live my life.
You know, I was at the Castle Light Braaifest last year.
Ichu.
And there were thousands of people there.
Yeah.
And it just dawned on me that, you know, all these people have come out here because they want to drink beer, eat meat, listen to music, chill with their friends, or whatever it is. That's what they want to do.
Yeah.
There was thousands of people there. At the Castle Light New Year's block party.
The block party, that was in Westgate, yeah.
At Westgate.
Yeah.
Again, there were thousands of people there that, okay, they were celebrating the New Year, but they really just came out. Shout out to Delta, by the way. Delta's been...
At Castle Light, if you feel like sending us a six-pack.
Delta's been doing a lot of good for the people of Zimbabwe.
Yes.
But there were thousands of people there that just wanted to do what it was, have a good time. If you look at some of the conversations people have on social media and that sort of thing, people open WhatsApp groups to discuss Manchester United, to discuss Dynamo's football club, and they don't discuss anything else in there. That's all
it's
you're allowed
space.
To talk about in those groups is football. People have ideas of doing a whole bunch of other things. Some people just want to be on TV, you know. They just want to go out and become stars. Some people just want to be musicians, pick up their guitar and sing.
Yeah.
But what you find a lot of, or a lot of what's happening, is you find all these people who want to do other things also comment on politics a lot.
Yeah.
Because it affects their lives on a daily basis.
Guys,
it affects the things that they want to
everything,
do.
Your dreams, even, you know, corner Manchester change my gets again, Dakasha. Like, and then eventually you get to the point where you're blaming the politics. You're so right. If Zanu wants to stay in power, you know, give them bread and circuses, guys. It's so simple how to stay in power, at least in my opinion. Bread and circuses. If people are fed, if there's jobs, the economy is good, give them Dynamos. They will already have this escapism. Give them Castle Light, and you won't have any political problems.
It's certainly interesting to see what will happen in the coming 18 months. We'll definitely be talking a lot about it. We just wanted to do a bit of state of the podcast.
State of the podcast, the economy, of politics. And beyond. I think we're running out of time, or we've been going on for long enough.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the people that do listen. Not much happened this week. The only real thing I can actually think of is that Chris has put out a bulletin looking for AC Lumumba.
I have. So AC, the last we heard of him, he claimed Lerato Hlongwane, and... she denied it. It was all in the H Metro. He's been very quiet since then. I am wondering what happened to him, what happened to his youth party. Nomaliso also left him the same week that, you know, Lerato denied him. So I'm just generally interested to find out, where is AC Lumumba? So if you're listening, AC, you know, get in touch. We'd love to have you on the show to, you know, talk about Viva, I suppose.
And everything else that's going on.
Yeah, and everything else that's going on. If anyone knows where he is, hey, give us a shout. Let us know.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba, at Chris Charamba on all social media platforms.
And I am Tawanda Henry Beatty, at Henry Beatty on all social media platforms. And cheers to the all six guys that tuned into a little bit of live streaming there on my Instagram. We'll try and do more of that. And just try and interact more with you guys. Thanks for listening. Free to say it.
Free to do it.
And now. Capital 263.